What's up, strangers? This is Chris Hawker, and you're listening to the Strange Carolinas Podcast. This week, we're going to be looking back at five of our favorite guests on the podcast this year, and you're in for a treat. Joining me for this journey is Kelly Duffy. How are you doing, Kelly?
Good. How are you doing, Chris?
I'm doing good. Let's start off with the anonymous mortician.
Okay. This was fantastic. My eyes were opened with this interview. First off, I have to say, I love how she has to be anonymous to bring you the the cold, hard truth about how you are manhandled after you die. It was chilling, but it was like equal parts chilling and fascinating. So like the blow by blow of, you know, things that they do to you, and the most the PVC pipe thing just did me in. Like, she talked about this person having this most extreme accident, and that the guy, she was so graphic, and then because she was anonymous, she was able to be graphic, and the guy that you talked about, how the guy had donated everything, including like his bone, his long bones, and his like flesh, and how they basically, after all that was done, that she had to Frankenstein him back together with PVC pipe and meat pads and duct tape. I mean, yeah. The things that you don't know, like the leaking,
right?
How long, like when you asked her, how long does embalming actually last? Like, I was aghast at this stuff. I was like, oh. So.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure most people that heard that interview decided they wanted to get cremated then.
I did. I absolutely did. I was in shock. I mean, and now granted, as shocked as I was, it was also one, like I said, it was one of my favorites. And I also thought, you know, she also offered some practical advice, which was the truth behind the upsell and and the double sealed caskets. You don't really need that. And we just try and upsell you. So I guess since she's left the profession or she's not in it anymore, she felt free to tell you that you could just go rot in peace and you don't have to worry about all that stuff.
Right.
Unless you have to dig up somebody, which is very rare, which I thought was fascinating. Like I said, the more you know.
Yep. In this clip from our interview with the anonymous mortician, she tells us all about how they use butt plugs and duct tape when readying bodies. When we spoke before the show, you mentioned butt plugs and duct tape. It sounds like an awesome party, but it really isn't, right?
No, it just gets you a little excited until you found out the truth. So, you know, women have breasts, and, you know, even if they're small, as you get older, they start to sag. So when you lay somebody down and they're going to be laying in the casket, their breasts are going to go to their armpits, you know, and we don't want grandma to look like she's got some bulges in her armpits. So what we do is we take duct tape, pull the breasts together, and pop those bad boys up, make them nice and perky. I mean, if they had implants, you know, that makes it even better. But yeah, you got to duct tape things in place. And then, so for butt plugs, it's called an AV plug, and you can actually buy these like online anywhere. I would not suggest doing so because it has like a corkscrew on the top.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, so when you die, you're going to release some bodily fluids. That happens. We give every deceased person a bath. But even after you aspirate, which is where you go in during the embalming and basically deflate all the inside organs and put like a cavity fluid in there to preserve everything, you're going to try to get out like all the urine and feces that you can. But that doesn't always happen. So most of the time, there is a chance, you know, that the deceased person can like crap themselves in the casket. And we don't want that happen because one, it smells, and two, it's bad. So you can stick an AV plug, and it's an anal vaginal plug, up the bum, and you screw it in. And that helps prevent the guy from crapping his pants. And I actually thought I had gotten everything out. You know, I was like, I don't need to do a plug. Got the man dressed. He crapped all over his suit. Yeah, not fine. And then also a fun little tidbit is every male that I had, we would put a string around the tip of his penis just because it helped prevent leakage from the urethra. So, yeah, and it just closes things off like a little, you know, clothespin.
All right, up next, let's talk about Shannon, the mermaid.
Okay. I loved Mermaid Shannon. She was the salty mermaid. I thought she was hilarious, first of all. I nearly fell off my chair when I found out the price of the mermaid tail. $5,000 to $6,000. I was shocked. The mermaid pimps and brokers I loved. The mermaid drama, though, was my favorite. I loved how she was, you know, engaging in like mer wars with these other people. And they had all this mermaid drama. And it was, you know, it was all self-made because they was within their own community. It's almost something I felt like I was watching something that I didn't was meant not to understand because it was between the mer people. I couldn't comprehend it. And also the fact that, you know, she can hold her breath for 2 minutes. My God.
All right. Jeez. But yeah, I mean, I knew she was going to be a lot of fun whenever. I have this thing where before I interview a guest, I make sure I have their name pronounced correctly. And I asked her how she pronounces her name. And she said, Shannon Rao. Like in Rao. That's when I knew she was going to be a lot of fun. And she was. I mean, I had tried to set up an interview with her, I guess 3 years ago was when this all went down, and because she wasn't able to attend the actual convention, she did hook me up with another mermaid, that which was nice of her that I got to interview. But yeah, I mean, she was a hoot. She had a lot to tell, that's for sure. I mean, but she's got a huge following, and I think it's great what she's doing. I mean, she's the only thing I can't believe, she's never been to that place down in Florida.
Yeah, that was a shocker because, you know, she had it, like, as far as the mermaid, I mean, I did, like I said, I didn't know a lot about the mermaid community and mer people. Sorry, there's mermen and merwomen. And I also didn't know about mer wranglers, like they have bodyguards that help them with, you know, unruly children and weird patrons and stuff like that.
And mostly to get them in and out of the water, especially out of the water. Yeah. That's a lot of what they do too.
I know. I loved how she said that they had to be carried some places.
Yeah.
I was like,
that's true. Yeah.
I can get into that lifestyle. I just sort of float up and somebody carries me to my next appointment. I could do that.
All right. Here's a clip from that interview with Shannon Rao where she tells us all about the drama she encountered at that North Carolina Mermania Festival. I attended the NC Mermania Festival a couple years ago and met quite a few colorful characters.
That's the one I wasn't allowed to go to because we were. That was a good time. That I did go. I mean, I had the hotel already, and it was like right down the road, and there were people I wanted to see, so they couldn't kick me out of the hotel. I went to the hotel, and they were like, oh my God, like oh my gosh, oh, she's attacking us, she's assaulting us. And I was literally there at the hotel bar having cocktails just like everybody. It was the biggest shit show I have ever seen. I these are full-grown adult people who are just so into, and there's so many good people that do it too, but it felt like high school. It felt like people trying to be more popular than the other people, and that's kind of where I pull back from that now. I kind of separate my work, my real people in real life, my real friends that I go out with on Friday nights. They don't really mix with this thing that I consider a job. That is the last time I dipped my foot into like social mermaiding. That is the last time. I was like, forget that. I mean, that convention, that showdown of Shannon came and she's gonna kill us all or whatever it was. And I remember because I warned you, I was like, well, you're not gonna be able to see me. But it got on the Daily Mail. It was such a big cluster that the Daily Mail got a hold of it, and they had to shut comments down because it got out of control in the comments. And I'm just like, these are adult people. A lot of them have children.
That's crazy.
You know, and they're still swearing, you know, that I attacked somebody, and the cops were called, and everybody was drinking, and there was lobby footage, but they wouldn't release the lobby footage unless somebody pressed charges. Of course, they didn't want to press charges because they were lying. So all they did was get the police report, and then they sent that everywhere. You know, you can say anything on a police report. It was just the silliest situation I've ever been in. But most people, when they meet me right away, find that I'm very silly. I'm very tiny and not going to hurt anybody, but like, whatever. It tickles me now. Like, it doesn't matter now. It's old news. But sometimes they still regurgitate that back up, and I'm just like, okay. Mermaids. They haven't really gone hard about it, because I did get a lawyer involved with a cease and desist, because I mean, they were writing letters to my employers and sending them, like, my aquariums and stuff, sending them copies of the police report. I swear, I have never heard of people being this hell-bent on getting somebody out the door.
Jeez.
These were people I used to be very close friends with. I don't think they hate me. I still don't think they do. I think it was competition. Honestly, I think there's a lot of, when you're a performer, there's a lot of narcissism. You know, you have to be to act like a mermaid. You have to go down, flip your hair around, you know, be this mysterious. It's just a part you play. And I think people either feel like it belongs totally to them, or they're just going to pull that bitchy siren part into their life. And you know what? That's okay. I've heard people say, I don't want them to be sad. I want everyone to eat, just not at my table.
Up next, good old Frank Schodel, the medium.
Yeah, I really, really liked the psychic medium. I liked the questions that you asked him, like the things that I didn't know, like the difference between a psychic and a medium right off the bat.
Yeah, I love that answer. I love that answer.
Yeah, and more involved than I ever thought that it would ever be. Like, I just sort of, I hate to say this, I threw them all into the same, you know, barrel, which was, oh, they all can tell you the lotto numbers. They can tell you when someone's going to die. They can tell you but no, I was 100% incorrect. Right. You know, so, and I liked the idea that he sort of, and he was very down to earth. I found his voice was calm. I liked the story of how he realized he was a psychic medium, and then he saw the dead lady walking across the room when he was 8. And how he knew his grandfather had a stroke before his mom got the phone call. I thought that was all pretty compelling. You know, here's the thing. Like I said, when we talked about it, I've been to, I don't even know if they were psychics or mediums or if they were real or fake or whatever, but we used to do it for entertainment. And this guy seemed like the real deal. So I like the things he said. I like how he sort of engages with his audience. Which he's just very down to earth. Like, you know, I can't give you everything you want, but here's what I can give you. And so anyway, I found him refreshing, I guess is the word I would say.
Yeah, me too. We didn't really get time to touch much on this, but he's also a teacher in that he teaches people to harness their own abilities and get in touch with them. So, I mean, during the interview, he spoke to me like he was teaching me about being a medium. You know, it wasn't like a proper interview so much as he was teaching me about what a medium actually does and what he does and all that. I found it very interesting. I mean, I didn't put much stock into the whole thing going into it, but after talking to Frank, I had a whole new respect for the occupation.
Yeah, I felt kind of the same way. I thought like he was sort of like an otherworldly professor, sort of giving us a glimpse into how things are done and like the things that he does teach. Like I definitely enjoyed it. I listened to it twice, as a matter of fact.
And in this clip from our interview with Frank Schodel, he tells us when and how he first discovered he had a gift.
Mm-hmm.
When and how did you discover you had a special gift?
Well, for the first time I actually realized that something was going on, I was 8 years old. And my younger sister and I were in my room playing around, and all of a sudden the room got really dark, and this woman appeared to our left, moved across the room to a closed closet door, and then just disappeared. And at first, yeah, I didn't know if I'd really seen what I saw or not. So I didn't say anything until my sister turned to me and said, "Did you see that?" And after that, it was, you know, anytime I would envision that woman, you know, the young woman, probably in her early 30s, but anytime I would see her in my mind's eye, things happened. I knew what was going to happen. I knew who was going to call on the phone. I knew what was going on. I think I was about 12 or 13 years old, and remember the phone rang in our house, and this was back in the good old days when phones were actually connected to the wall. And before my mother picked up the receiver and answered the phone, I fell back against a door sill and went, "Oh my God, he's had a stroke." And at that age, I didn't know what a stroke was.
Right.
But my mother, you know, kind of gave me a puzzled look, answered the phone, talked for a few minutes. It was her sister, my aunt, and it was the call that let her know that my grandfather had had a stroke and he was in the hospital, and that's what he ultimately died from. And she just very slowly put the receiver back down and looked at me and she said, "You knew, didn't you?"
What did she say after that, then, once she realized that
it was just that. It was just that recognition and acknowledgement. There have been connections, telepathic, psychic, whatever you want to call it, connections within my family going back generations. So it wasn't a situation, even though I was raised Roman Catholic, when things like that happened, it was just like, "Oh yeah, okay, that's, you know, Aunt Sophie doing her thing again."
Let's talk about Rusty and Nicole, who decided to build their own goth dance club in their house.
I love the story of how they met. Like, he's the DJ and he's kind of too shy to ask her, and she's the girl that dances at his club, and how they sort of reenact that in their new life because they have this amazing goth mansion with the dance club in it now. You know, I also, you know, they have like serious commitment. Like they really go out, and they were talking about how they make it like their job to go out and find trinkets that they can either refurbish or figure out how that they can fit it into their house. And the fact that it's a dance club and a little bit of a museum too. Like that's kind of, I mean, I've never seen it with my own eyes, but that's what it seems like. And also his photography is amazing. Like the Neil Gaiman aspect and the fact that he, you know, when I was originally looking at it, I was like, "Oh, you know, they have this in their house." And then I went and looked at all of his photography, and I was like, "He is incredibly, incredibly talented."
He is. Yeah, I mean, I love their meeting story and how it took him 3 years to break the ice and get up the nerve to go up to her. And but yeah, I mean, the whole idea of setting up a room of your house into a dance club with lasers and awesome sound speakers and that could fit 25 people. I mean, I would love to do something like that. Not that I'd ever invite anybody over, but I'd still love have something like that just to say I had something like that. You know,
it would.
Saying?
And if you ever wanted to throw a big goth dance party, you would be 100% set because the way that they have it set up, it is. And I love how they said that their kids enjoy it, but the kids won't actually listen to their music. They want their own music piped in, but they want them to start up the club.
Yeah, the tiny club. Yep. And here's a clip from our interview with Rusty and Nicole where they tell us the sweet story about how they met and why they have a goth club in their home. Before we started, and you guys have kind of alluded to it, Nicole told me the story of how you two met. Will you share it with our listeners?
Sure. You want to tell them since you were the stalker?
I suppose. So I was involved with a nightclub in Myrtle Beach that was a very popular nightclub at the time, and it was industrial goth and grunge. That was grunge days.
Yep.
And it had kind of outgrown its spot in Myrtle Beach, so we started looking for a new location and stumbled on Greensboro. I don't recall how, but the owner purchased a fairly large piece of property here, and we took the next 6 months to build a goth club here in Greensboro. At the time, there wasn't really any clubs in Greensboro, so to do something as, you know, outside of the box as that was a huge risk. But it ended up being extremely popular, and Nick just fell in love with it. And
oh yeah, I mean, I was in love with him and never even saw him. The DJ booth in this club was two stories high, so all you could see was the light that shined on, you know, the DJ. But I would go there. I worked second shift at the hospital specifically so I could get off at 11 o'clock, go to the club, stay there, dance, and I came by myself. Like, I would always meet my friends there because I had to, like, stomp the pavement. I could not be bothered with anybody else's time schedule. All I wanted to do was dance. I had my spot. I was in my spot, and I lived there.
That was probably went on for about 3 years. And, you know, because I had the bird's eye view of the dance floor, I saw everyone, and I noticed her very early on, and I got to know the patterns of what songs she liked, and I could get her out dancing if I wanted to without just by playing a song without her even being any the wiser. But I guess it took about 3 years before I got up the courage to actually introduce myself, which was at another bar, and I said hi, and I knew, you know, I only had about a minute that I had to throw in I'm the DJ at Club Zero to have any kind of a chance. So hi, how you doing? You know, hey, within a minute I had told her, I was the DJ there. So that gave me an in, and we had a good conversation, and worked out great.
Our final one is Liz Elliott, the spider photographer / roller derby enthusiast.
Okay, originally, and I told you this point blank, I was not on board. I am terrified. I'm sorry. I was terrified of spiders. I would say that this was the most transformational interview for me because I hate spiders, and I was like, ugh. And I actually caught some of her enthusiasm, and I went out and looked at some of my local spiders. And even we're talking big as my hand spiders out here in the woods. So, and I'm from the city originally, so this is terrifying to me. So I went and looked at some of these spiders, and I even took a picture of one with my iPhone. So I thought, like, she had infectious energy. And I'm going to admit to something. I went out after I listened to this and bought a macro and fish eye lens.
I knew that's where you're going
I bought one for myself and for my daughter, and I for my iPhone because of this interview. So talk about, you know, I went from absolutely not to let me emulate this woman in every way humanly possible, which makes no sense. And I also love that the roller derby aspect. So she's sort of an all around badass.
Yeah. Plus she's a scientist too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I did the same thing. We were sitting in the car one day, and I saw this weird-looking spider crawling across the windshield. So I got out of the car, got real close to it, took a picture of it, except I went one step further and actually sent it to her and asked her to autograph it. No, I'm just kidding about that part. I asked her which it was, and it was the one that she loved so much, the jumping spider.
Oh, well, that's right, because she loves the, I'm going to say this, the jumping spiders are cute. She is right on that one. So yeah, so this was the interview that clearly changed us internally.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't have a fear of spiders, but I will tell you this, she didn't transform me, but she was one of the most infectious and enthusiastic. And you could tell she loved this hobby of hers. I mean, she truly loved it. And she loved, like you, she loved changing people's opinions about spiders.
And she did. She did what she set out to do. And it's funny because I go and I check her Instagram now. I'm like, I wonder if she found a new spider. And I'll go and look. So I was like, wow, that's a big deal. So she got out there. She got the word out about spiders. And look at you and me out there taking photos.
That's right. So how's that fisheye lens look?
The fisheye one, I've messed up. I'm like, okay, this looks terrible. The macro one, it was better. Like I tried to get like a couple little things, but I think I need to practice a little bit more with it. I think she's obviously a little bit more skilled. So I'm going to continue to practice, but the fact that it inspired me to go out to get one for myself, and my daughter got one and she's better with it. So, because I think she's better all overall with the iPhone and knowing what to take pictures of. So,
right. Okay, cool. And in this clip from our interview with Liz Elliott, she shares her spider bucket list with us. Do you have a bucket list of spiders that you haven't been able to photograph yet?
Oh my God, are you kidding? Huge bucket list. I've gotten a couple of black widows before. We have a pool in our backyard and they like to make their webs on the lip of the pool. So if you have a pool in North or South Carolina, you probably have a black widow or two under there. Don't kill them. They're actually good spiders. Just relocate them to another area. So I'd like to get more black widows. I've only gotten a couple and they were juveniles. So they weren't the completely black widow. They were, you know, they still had some spots on them and things like that. But that's one. There's another type that I originally saw a video about the net casting spiders in Australia, which... They use a different hunting method than other spiders. It's kind of unique. They create a very special type of web that they hold between their feet, and then they kind of stretch it out and over their prey like a net. And I found a type of spider on my front porch one day and started taking pictures of it, and didn't really think much of it, and then started researching, you know, what type of spider it could be, and realized that it was a net casting spider right on my front porch. And I thought they were only in Australia, but apparently North and South Carolina and, you know, the South has net casting spiders too. And we're one of the only places in America that has them. Their nickname is the ogre faced spider because they have these massive, two front eyes that are considered the most light sensitive eyes of even all animals, owls included. They're absolutely fascinating, and I've only had them on my front porch like twice, and they're difficult to photograph, but they just have the most interesting looking face, and so I want to get more of those guys. And then, you know, there's just, I have to get to Australia someday. There are, you know, some incredibly cool spiders, trapdoor spiders, redback spiders, like all of those kinds of things that are pretty frightening to most people. But that would be probably top of my bucket list, going to Australia and seeing what they have down there.
And that's about all the time we have for this episode of Strange Carolinas. Kelly, I want to thank you for joining us and looking back at our five of our favorite from the year.
It's been a pleasure.
Yeah. And have a happy new year.
You too.
And we'll talk soon.
We will. Take care, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.